Reading moved 4 points clear of the relegation zone with a 2-1 win over informed Preston on Saturday, and Royals fans had the Yaku Mate Mo Barrow double act to thank. Welcome to episode 190 of the Tyler Sen podcast with myself, Mark Mayo, and joining me this week after a lovely international break where we all got together and got about football for a little while. We're now back, and to do that with us this weekend is Dan Wimbush, aka Wim, aka the founder of the Tyler Sen podcast. How's it going, mate?
Mark, thanks for letting me back in. Once again, I thought you'd managed to change the locks, but I seem to have snuck in through the doggy door.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You had the decency of inviting me onto your little five-a-side venture, so I thought I'd better repay the faith with some podcasting action.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully we'll both come through this podcast unscathed ahead of tomorrow's Titanic matchup.
Yeah, and absolutely. That I mentioned the five-a-side thing mainly because we're looking for a sponsor who is going to provide us with things such as free shirts, free shin pads, free beer, those sorts of things that we're always on the lookout for as the Tyler Sten podcast semi-unofficial joke of a five-a-side team that we're kind of formulating.
We embody the unprofessional joke of a five-a-side football team. So if that is what you want to be associated with your brand, please get in touch. And, you know, we can also, Mark, I hope you've managed to secure us some of those delicious sounding hobnob flavoured carabaos as well.
Yes, definitely not April Fool's joke that we had on Tyler Sen was the hobnob flavoured carabaos. Carabao, to be fair, in reality, they are supposedly leaving us at the end of the season. And we had the idea that perhaps they're going to give us a nice sending off treat with a hobnob flavoured carabao. So if you see those on the shop shelves, then someone's stolen our idea, basically.
Yeah, they've kind of been on that upward trajectory, really. They started with us, then I think they got in with Chelsea, and now they sponsor the League Cup. So wouldn't blame them for leaving us behind.
Yeah, and you just know that when that League Cup gets lifted up, that, you know, we were there before anyone knew about Carabao. we were the
guinea pigs.
People wondering what the hell Carabao was. So. Is that, and you can of course enjoy your lovely Carabao in a lovely Tyler Sten mug. I don't know if everyone has seen this, but we've had a new run of mugs, which is kind of by fans for fans on the side of them this time. So if anyone's still keen on procuring one of those, I think they're going for about £12. Please be in touch on the Gmail. Can hopefully see a article on the website as well for that. And a quick thank you. As we've just come up off a fortnight break, thank you to all the Patreon people who continue to fund us and to add in little bits here and there to ensure that we can go and do little bits here and there and return that in terms of content. And hopefully people have seen over the international break that we returned that with two interviews. Firstly, myself speaking to Jose Gomez, and then Ollie speaking with Jan Kermigan, and our two of the best interviews I think we've done as a podcast, if I can say so myself, Dan, and really good to have got those out. And I think the reaction's been really decent.
Yeah, I will put it slightly above my interview with John Halls and maybe the one, you know, above Elroy Cromier. So, you know, we can put him in that tier. But yeah, if you are a part of the Patreon crew, you are part of the solution, not the part of the problem in this digital economy. So you are actively helping rather than just, you know, taking content for free. So if you have got a couple of quid, as I always say, it's that digital tip jar that really helps out. So yeah, thank you to everyone who continues to support.
Absolutely. And those people who support us are dying to hear our thoughts on the Reading-Preston game. So without further ado, let's crack on then with the recap.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
Right, I said at the top of the show, this is all about the double act, and let's focus then to begin with on Yaku Mate and Mo Barrow, the players who have scored five of the last six Reading goals. They've teed up each other twice in that as well. And this is just one of those stories that perhaps we didn't see coming with Mate and Barrow being able to help each other out so much. If you know, as January came round and Nelson Oliveira came into the team and we thought that was going to be, you know, the solution to the relegation problem, and Gareth McCleary picked up a bit of form. I didn't see Mate and Barrow coming to the fore so much. But Dan, they've started with this game, you know, kind of in a 4-2-3-1. Was it Barrow up front? Was it Mate? Kind of switched around a little bit, produced the goods in the first half, and really in the clinical attacking performance that we, you know, as Reading fans, haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as say clinical. I think we were pretty wasteful, actually, especially in the first half. But for the ones that were put on an absolute plate, yeah, you couldn't argue with these two finishes. big credit to John Swift for the absolutely delicious pass for the first goal. And I was watching. I was in the prawn sandwich section. I was in hospitality with Wim Senior as an early birthday treat. So I had a really great view of Mate absolutely busting a gut to get past his man and get on the end of Barrow's ball across the box. And that's where Mate's best. We saw that right at the start of the season. He was getting into those positions and getting those goals. And then he drifted really sort of badly. And I don't know whether it was the position shift. I mean, he was asked to play in the centre of it.
I know he had a bit of an ankle problem as well, which probably didn't help.
Yeah, he does. The funny thing is, neither of them really suit that central striker role. And that is where, you know, you do salivate a bit, because if you can get Oliveira in there as well as that focal point, it allows those two to do what they do best. I mean, Mo Barrow, we saw it all of last season. Get the ball to him out wide, give him a bit of yardage to run into, and he will terrify any fullback in the division. The problem has often been for him is that final either shot or delivery, but it was inch perfect for Mate, cracking first goal. And the second one as well, really great hustle. Yes, it was pretty terrible defending and communication from the Preston back line, but you've got to be in the right position to finish it. And I did have real panic when I saw Barrow sort of go through, and I thought, oh no, he's going to trip over and fall or hit the despairing guy diving on the line. But did what needed to be done. And yeah, as I said, we weren't very clinical with other chances and could well have been out of sight. But the important thing is we did stick them away, because how many games this season, Mark, have we seen where Reading have had those clear-cut chances and they've only taken one? At least this week we took two.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think with Oliveira being out, you think you're right in saying that who is going to be that central striker, and it seems to be kind of, you know, we're effectively waiting for Oliveira to get back. I think Jose Gomez really knows that he is the man, no matter what, to lead the line, and fitting around that will work. And yeah, I suppose in a way we did have to rely on that kind of error to get that second goal, and getting the second goal, as we know to our cost, as you say, has been very difficult this year. And I'd want to know what you think it is about, you know, maybe you can say it was a fear factor that led to the second goal, or just lazy sloppiness. I'm inclined to say it's the second one. But in terms of about Mate and Barrow, what do you think it is that defences can't cope with? Is it just as simple as saying it's the pace? Because obviously they both of them have it in abundance. So is it, you know, something? Is it the width that they provide as well? Obviously Mate is very physical in his play. What is it, do you think, that actually works with them as a combination going at defences?
Well, it is the pace and the power. I mean, Mate's power and his pace got him into that position to be on the end for the first goal. And Barrow, as I said earlier, I mean, his pace and his trickery on the wing is fantastic. If he had that final ball, he wouldn't be playing for Reading. That's simple as that, because, you know, when he does those step overs, you can see defence is terrified. And that, even in the Premier League, would lead him to get past men. But if you can't put in decent crosses, you know, what, 6-7 times out of 10, you're not going to get to the very top level. And I would say Barrow is probably about, what would you say, 4-5 times out of 10, puts in either really quality delivery or a good shot. So, but look, you take what you can get. And, you know, it doesn't take a Premier League level winger to get you away from being 20, you know, outside of 22nd to 24th in the Championship. So, you know, that he's, you know, that outlet, and he terrifies defences. And when they are pre-concerned with a Barrow on form, that does free up room for other players like Mate to really prosper. So I think Mate as well, getting on in age, you know, he's what, I can't even think how old he is now. Is he 22, 23, Yaku Mate now?
Yeah, I guess 23 without Googling it, which I'm definitely not doing now.
Yeah, a very quick Googling says he turned 23 in February. So yeah. Bear in mind now, he came to Reading with what, just a handful of appearances for, you know, Paris Saint-Germain's second team. And I think he made one PSG appearance. But now, you know, again, you look at it, and if you include his loan spell in France last year, you're talking about a player who's got, you know, close to 100 appearances under his belt. It was his 50th. For Reading on Saturday. So you're learning what positions to get in, you're learning what works in this division and what doesn't, and he's profiting from it. So he's always had Yaku Mate. From the very first time we saw him play under Yap Stam, I looked at that player and said, there is something about this guy that if Reading can refine it, a little bit in the same way that if you looked at early Shane Long, you saw there is something about this guy, but it's very raw. If Yaku can get to that level, I don't think he will, but It would be a fantastic output if he does get to that Shane Long kind of quality. But credit to him, you know, his biggest challenge, I think, is going to be attitude and commitment to the cause. He's a very popular player, but there does seem to be still something about the work rate and him just drifting out of games that needs working on. But if he finds that consistency, as, again, using the Shane Long comparison, he did in that 2010-2011 season, he could be a fantastic player. And unfortunately, as I was saying with Barrow, though, if he does reach that level, it sadly probably won't be with us.
Yeah, it was interesting, that Shane Long comparison, because I think about other players that have had real successful periods of form for Reading. You think of Simon Church, Matthew Mance is perhaps...
Off the beast.
Probably is a different sort of player to Mate, but probably in terms of importance to the team, and he kind of drifted in and out massively when he was in the club. So it's an interesting one to watch with that, because plenty of players have had good championship seasons and then faded into obscurity. As I kind of say, Simon Church, if you are in that team that is creating chances, and you know, you don't have to take them all, if you take one or two a game, then that's still a hefty goal tally that you're building up there. And yeah, as you say, with his 50th appearance, that's a good... We're getting good indicators now that this is more his real form than glimpses and false dawn. So I want to talk about the tactics that we've had with against Preston, because the stats say 37% possession, 72% pass success rate, which would, you know, really indicate not to the Gomez style. And when I was speaking to Jose Gomez, it basically boiled down to his tactics wants to hold the ball, wants control possession, because he thinks it's just logistically better because the opposite team doesn't have the ball to punish you with. But also he said that it's about giving the tools to the players to go and succeed and make their own decisions on the pitch and everything. Do you think that's kind of what the 37% possession figure kind of indicates? Do you think it was because the players saw gaps in behind Preston when they could counter, they had to make use of them, and, you know, what's the point in passing around if there's gaps in behind? Or is this more of an indication that Preston had so much of the second half that statistic is born out of Preston's pressure towards the end of the game?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd be fascinated to see what the breakdown was in terms of first half to second half, because the second half, especially with the changes Reading had to make, losing Swift and Barrow, they really lost a lot of their sort of attacking outlet and they retreated back into their shells. Something that's a little bit more tolerable to do when you're 2-0 up, although it is frustrating because how often, as Gomez said in his post-match, I don't understand why we change our mentality. I think as soon as they brought Paul McShane on, it sort of didn't wave the white flag, but it did sort of say to Preston, OK, we're going to try and soak this up now. And that's sort of why you lose the possessional battle. Obviously, Preston at 2-0 down have a lot less to lose, so they are just going to soak up a bit more of the ball. And, you know, Reading's midfield and a lack of a proper outlet from, we spoke earlier, you know, there is no real central striker. You know, there isn't an Oliver who's going to hold up the ball or a Bodvarsson. So the ball just kept coming back. I thought the first half in particular was quite possibly the best Reading first half performance I've seen in a long, long time. It really had everything. And if you had, you know, the old cliche, if you dropped in from Mars and knew nothing, you wouldn't say that Preston were the team 12 unbeaten, and you would have said it was Reading. So that's the Reading I think we've all been waiting to see. I think it's the Reading that Paul Clement would have liked to have seen before he was sacked. And Yap Stam as well, in his pomp, would have seen from Reading, because they did still look to move the ball around. We didn't really mention him, but Andy Rinomota coming back into that side in that midfield just made such a massive, massive difference. And I think he got the best out of Baker as well. And those two look to be forming a nice little understanding and freeing up John Swift as well to do what Swift does best, which is kind of operate as a weird sort of number 10 role and have that bit more freedom. One of Swift's big problems in recent weeks has been getting caught towards the middle of the park, and he plays a misplaced pass or he loses the ball and that really catches us out. He didn't really have that responsibility in this game, so I think that helped as well. But yeah, in a long roundabout way of answering the original question, I don't particularly read too much into the possessional stats, because when Reading did have possession, they actually did a lot with it. And I said, could easily have been 3 or 4-0 up at the break.
Well, ultimately, I think that's what the fans want when it comes to possession stats. It's a nice thing if you get home and you say, oh, we had 65% possession today. But it's seldom during a game you think, oh, well, 1-0 down, but we've had all the ball. It's not something that many fans, particularly, certainly Reading fans, really think that is much of a moral victory. So let's hear from the man himself, then let's hear from Jose Gomez, and then come back and cover the other half of the recap.
First of all, it was a very difficult game. We cannot forget that we played against one team that the last 12 games they didn't lose. They won the last six games that they play away, so they were in the real strong and good moment. So it was very difficult to win. We prepared very well ourselves and to face their strongest points. I don't remember even one goal situation that they create to us. Okay, they score. So it means that my players, they did really well. They were brave. They followed the plan. They create some more goal situations that we could score. So it was very important. But we know that the thing didn't finish. We are in the way to achieve to our goals, but we must to fight a lot during these seven games.
Well, you said then, Wim, that Rinomota came back into the team and he was highly praised. I want to also talk about Matt Miazga, who again just seems to be that sort of building the reputation of that rock at the heart of his the defence. And in terms of, you know, we know his abilities and everything, but where do you see his potential for staying at Reading? Because part of me is getting a bit worried now that anyone who was watching the last few games, and you know, we've kept a decent amount of clean sheets, certainly on the road, I think that if you're upper Championship, lower Premier League scouts thinking, where can we pick up a good squad player or a first team centre back on loan, you're looking at someone like Miazga now and saying he is an ideal candidate, because Chelsea aren't going to play him next season. I really can't imagine, unless they change coach. And even then, he's got to fight his way past players like Michael Hector, who is basically being Sheffield Wednesday's player of the season so far, from what I can tell. And he's going to be back at Chelsea. Miazga, etc., etc., etc. Miazga, keeping hold of him just seems like it's getting a bit difficult now.
Yeah, it is a tricky one. In a way, you hope he has a bit of a quiet last few months and we can sneak him in through the back door. But look, I mean, hopefully he's getting a positive impression of the club and working with Jose Gomez, and that can, you know, that can account for a lot. We really don't know the financial situation of the football club going into the summer. Will there be a lot of money to spend? You know, we did a great job in January of getting a lot of these players out of the club, but they're all coming back. Most of them are coming back from loans, so they'll have the job again to try and ship them out. So will the money be there? In isolation, yeah, I'd absolutely have him back in a heartbeat. I think him coming in for a Laurie has been the best swap deal we could have had all season. And I think it's really exposed, actually, how poor a Laurie was doing as a centre-back and how much he flattered to deceive. So just having that solid player in, and it's the type of player that brings out the best in Liam Moore as well. You know, Moore had that great partnership with McShane, who was a couple of years younger and sharper. And now he seems to be getting on just as well with our new USA man. I enjoyed the USA chants coming from Club 1871. Brought back some warm, fuzzy Hanneman and Bobby Convey memories there. So look, whether we can get him, who knows? There's so many questions about what Chelsea, as you said, what does Chelsea want to do with him? What does the player want to do? So look, hopefully I'd have him back in a heartbeat, but it's one of those questions that you just look to in the summer and say, well, can we do a deal? Does the player want to do a deal? For now, really enjoying the form he's in. He's bringing out the best in the rest of the defence as well. So yeah, fantastic. You got the sponsors player of the match as well. Talks really well. Seems like a really nice, friendly, down-to-earth bloke as well. So exactly the type of player that embodied that old Reading way.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of things from inside the club saying he's a nice lad as well, which is useful to have, I think, certainly in adversity, someone who just appears to be a nice sort of chilled out kind of guy who isn't going to, you know, kick up a fuss or anything and is enjoying.
He's not Matt Mills.
So, yeah, Exactly. And when centre-backs aren't Matt Mills, then that's already the first tick in my box. So that's a great start. Let's talk about the last bit of the game then before we talk a bit more widely about where we're at in the season at the moment. And that onslaught that Preston gave us towards the end of the 90 minutes. They did score. They did get one back, and the two-minute review of the highlights on YouTube focuses on a far post header, which perhaps wasn't as good a chance as it really looked like it was. But ultimately, what do you think it was that meant that we did survive this and we didn't concede a late equaliser?
People were putting their bodies on the line. There was that real commitment and desire to protect the lead. Having the two-goal advantage helped as well, because I think whilst we did drop back, we weren't quite as panicky as we might have been. The game was drifting quite a lot. I think the guy's name completely escapes me now, but Preston were basically down to 10 men for most of the second half as well, which helped. They had a guy who eventually trotted off with a few minutes to go, but after Preston had used all their subs and picked up an injury. So I think that helped as well. It did, you know, embody what we used to do. Understand when we were winning those kind of games where, again, people like McShane were putting blocks in, getting the headers away, clearances were sensible. So, you know, it was nothing revolutionary. It was, you know, we've done that in a lot of games and just unfortunately capitulated in those very final moments. And this time it showed just how important having that two-goal cushion is, because we did have the slip-up, albeit I do think it was offside. Preston's one goal, the guy who headed it originally and before it came to Stockley. So, yeah, having that two-goal advantage helped, and that slight easing of the pressure. Plus, as you said, good performances from the likes of Miazga.
And we're now 4 points clear of the drop zone. Favourable goal difference as well. We're kind of dragging Birmingham and QPR back towards us as well. And, you know, Birmingham with the points deduction, QPR who just sacked their manager. It'll be nice. I mean, it's such a massive mental boost to jump ahead of one of those teams and who have, you know, I think they've been ahead of us all season, basically. So in terms of the relegation picture, things are obviously looking up for us at the moment, but it just goes to show that one or two games can still drag us back in it. But Rotherham getting hammered 6-1 on the weekend and a Millwall throwing away what would have been a massive 3 points at Leeds shows that for a few weeks now, we've been on the right side of these kind of, you know, one goal here or there sort of games.
Yeah, well, you look at the real boost that late win over Wigan, those 2 points there, and the late win at Ipswich, that's the 4 points right there that we're clear. Mm. So it shows just how vital those late wins were. But at the same token, you could go back to Reading conceding two goals in the last 10 minutes in both games against Rotherham. If we don't concede those, suddenly we're, 10 points clear and absolutely laughing. So it swings and roundabouts. But the nice thing about being involved in a relegation survival battle as opposed to a promotion playoff chasing battle is a win is huge. Absolutely huge. I mean, how many games have Rotherham actually won this season?
Seven games
all season. So they've won 7 of 39 games.
And two of those have come in the last 5 as well. So
exactly. So, you know, this isn't, you know, unlike a playoff chasing team where, you know, you drop, you know, you fail to win two. I mean, look what's happened to Middlesbrough, how they've suddenly gone from being an automatic promotion contender to, you know, miles behind and possibly out of the playoffs. Whereas in this battle just to stay up, you know, 3 points is so hard for a Rotherham, a Bolton or an Ipswich to pick up. So, you know, it's almost double what a win at the top is worth, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So I think jumping ahead a little bit, I do think we are closing in on the finish line. Looking at the way it is and the fixtures for Rotherham, I think getting to 45 points, especially with this goal difference, you know, I can't see Rotherham getting 10 points from 7 games. It could happen. Anything can happen in this league. But realistically speaking, I think Rotherham getting 10 points, which is effectively 3 wins and a draw from 7 games, it's not going to happen. So just pick up those 5 points and we'll move on. But you want more than that because you want Reading to be picking up more and more form. And we're 7th in the form guide now, Mark. You know, that shows how, you know, decent we've actually been in the last few weeks. So, you know, hopefully we can continue that sort of form and sort of finish, and you saw how picking up momentum at the end of the season, whether it was Brian McDermott in 2010 and Alan Pardew going even further back to 2000, picking up that form at the end of one season can translate into the next one. So hopefully it's onwards and upwards, and we can put the actual relegation battle behind us in quick fashion.
Well, that nicely leads on to my final question for the recap, and that is a complete hypothetical, I know. But we are slowly looking towards next season now, and that question of, are we building a team that can either beat relegation or one that can next year look to do better, look to, you know, I think it's in the Championship saying being in and around the playoffs is such a vague term, because, you know, Hull are 12th and they're still in and around the playoffs if you really believe it. So do you think that from the signs that you've seen, obviously there are hundreds of specifics that we could get into, but from the general signs you've seen, are you confident that there is a team somewhere in the club at the moment that can build out and become a team that can threaten the mid to the top end of the table?
Absolutely. Would I put money on it? Probably not, based on the massive transition we've got to go through and how many loanies we've got, the unanswered questions about finances, etc., etc. But, you know, like you say, I mean, look at the team. Forest, 9th, beat them fairly easily. Preston, 10th, done the double over them this season. Sheffield Wednesday, nothing special. Hull, I thought all the worst teams come to the Badesky this season, and they're 5 points off the playoff places. So you can always get into that mix. You can always get into that playoff mix, and it doesn't take a lot. Whether Reading will be able to do that, if they kept this core together, if they kept all of these loanees, this exact squad, and, you know, kept Oliveira, got him fit, had a Jordan Abi to come back to fitness, and were able to add 3 or 4 on top of that, absolutely. I've thought all season long that Reading have competed in just about every game this season. Probably only the Leeds and the Sheffield United games, you know, where I thought Reading were really overwhelmed. I mean, look at, you know, you go, it's way, way back in the far etches of history now, but the Norwich game at the Mad Stad, Reading weren't blown away at all that day. I thought they were pretty much on a par with Norwich, and unfortunately sucker punched ourselves. But anything can happen. You just don't know who you get hold of, who you keep hold of. But the signs are certainly more promising. And if you do look at that pack in the bottom half of the table, Reading is certainly one of those that you would pick to have a breakout next season.
Yeah, I can understand why that would be. And I think my sort of thoughts on it at the moment are that next season is so much is going to depend on the finances and what we can do in terms of moving players out. It wouldn't surprise me if the club bite the bullet and realise that, you know, maybe we'll be able to bring Miazga back on loan, but that'll involve selling Liam Moore. And if the club look at their finances and say, you know, it's this or a transfer embargo, I think they'll be probably very mature about it, which maybe they weren't last summer, to our detriment. You know, I can understand why, but at the same point, maybe selling someone like Liam Moore might have worked for us a bit better than what we've got into. So the financial situation is going to have such a huge bearing on it. And because of that, I think we're probably going to rely a lot on the academy as we go into next season. That might mean we start slowly, but I think, as you say, when you talk about players like Oliveira being in the team, Jordan Abita coming back, that gives the foundation of quality that you need for academy players to sort of flourish around them. So I'm optimistic the next season, yeah, as you say, being in and around the playoffs at this stage of season, I'm not saying it's easy, but I don't think it's particularly tough, so long as you're in a well-managed team with a lot, you know, a bit of momentum behind them and everything. And the fact that Preston were the form team when we played them this year, this half of the year, compared to when we played them at the first half of the year, and they were, you know, basically bottom of the table, and even Paul Clement's side could beat them away from home. Yeah. That shows how the Championship goes, and that in itself is reason for optimism. So we'll put next season to one side for a few weeks at least, and talk about what's going on at the moment, and let's jump into News Bites and see what's going on there.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So as we speak, the Reading under-23s are playing Bayern Munich second string in the Premier League International Cup. And this is a game that I am currently just checking in on, because basically there is no point in me saying anything other than, you know, the final whistle, because people are going to know the result as they listen to this. and I believe that Bayern Munich are currently winning in the second half. So that's completely irrelevant as a podcast goes, but it shows that Reading into a good position. The under-23s, they lost to Newcastle in the Premier League Cup last time out before the international break. The under-18s beat Swansea and Fulham before the break. They lost 2-0 to Southampton on Saturday. And the women's team, 1-0 win over Bristol City, their first league win of the calendar year on the weekend. But it's pretty much all about the Cup this year. Semi-final of the FA Cup versus West Ham at Adams Park, Saturday, April 14th. That's at 12:30. So a huge semi-final there. And Wim, the idea of them getting to Wembley and a Reading team playing at Wembley, it will be against a team that's certainly going to be the favourite no matter who we play, because we're effectively the fourth favourite out of all the teams in the semi-final. But the idea of us getting a Wembley trip this year is certainly not something I thought we had at the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic effort from the women's side and all the support they've had. I mean, the club has been growing year on year, and it's great to see the fans getting behind them. I've yet to actually take in a game yet. I find it hard enough just to get to Reading games now. But certainly if they got to Wembley, you know, I would, you know, unashamedly jump on that bandwagon and, you know, hopefully it builds momentum. You know, it gets, you know, the better sponsorship opportunities. I see that the Super League's now being sponsored by Barclays next season. So that will increase the money, that increases the professionalism, and that increases the quality. And, you know, it's fantastic. You know, the quality of the women's game is just going up and up and up. But the atmospheres you get at the games are friendly and very, you know, sort of family orientated. So that's another great thing. And look, you know, whatever your opinion on women's football, you can't diminish the achievement if that Reading side manages to get to a final. And hopefully, and I'm sure, you know, a good, you know, what, 10,000-20,000, you would think Reading fans would hopefully turn out for that one. So fingers crossed they can get the job done, unlike sadly our men's team and their two semi-finals to date.
Yeah, hopefully that is a case of, you know, a few thousand Reading fans would take it upon themselves to get to Wembley. It's not exactly the hardest journey, is it? I've just seen the 1-0 scoreline to Bayern is after 74 minutes of that under-23s game. So that's getting towards the end of that. There is a picture actually of a Mo Barrow sat next to Yaku Mate in the box of the Reading at the Madstad. So that fully is in theme with today's podcast. So that's good to see them there together. Quick roundup of the international royals as well, because we are off the back of an international break. Yaku Mate made his debut for Ivory Coast against Liberia. That was his first start. He has played for the youth teams of Ivory Coast, so he got a debut there. Matt Miazga played for one of the United States games with a 1-1 draw against Chile. Danny Lola scored in one of his two starts for England under-19s, although they failed to qualify out of their groups for the Euros. And Callum Harriott appeared for Guyana as they qualified to the Gold Cup for the first time. So that's something for the summer for us to keep an eye out on. We had Gareth McCleary and Michael Hector at the old Gold Cups with Jamaica, I seem to remember, one year.
Yeah, I think Hector committed an absolute howler. I think I think it was the final.
Yeah, I think might it was have even actually, been yeah.
Rings a bell. But yeah, I mean, great exposure. And the more they go away with their countries, pick up that international experience, the better for them. As long as they don't get injured.
Well, I was going to say it's easy to forget that Callum Harriott is enjoying, you know, the first full month of football he's enjoyed in, you know, years basically. And as a young winger, that's it's easy to forget that, I think.
Yeah, and as I said, you go away and you pick up things. You're generally coached by some top quality coaches as well. And, you know, you bring that back. And if you bring a new trick with you, fantastic. Again, just don't get injured. That's all we ask.
Well, let's hope that's the end of the international breaks for the season now. So we don't have to worry about those anymore. And we can move on now to the mailbag and focus back on Reading FC.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Well, we had a hypothetical earlier, and we start the mailbag with another hypothetical, and that is, where would we be as a club if Ron Gourlay and Paul Clement were still at the helm rather than Nigel Howe and Jose Gomez? That's from Tommy, that question on Twitter. And I think it's a really interesting one to look at, because we've talked about how important the January signings have been for us. I don't think really any of them would have come in had Gourlay been in charge. Maybe, you know, you can look at someone like Lewis Baker, would have been a relatively decent shout. Oliveira, perhaps not. I don't want to overplay the Portuguese connection with Gomez, but it's obviously got some sort of relevance. If Clement was still in charge, do you see us being in the relegation zone, or do you think we'd be more or less just on the cusp?
I mean, look, Clement, for all his flaws, and I don't think he was the long-term solution, but the form was slowly starting to gather a little bit of momentum during his final sort of weeks. I think he sort of, his sacking did come at a weird sort of time, really, a bit like when Brendan Rodgers got sacked, really, in that we'd actually been playing at an okay level. But look, would we have had this sort of rousing comebacks against Wigan and Ipswich? Probably not. Would we have enough to be out of the relegation zone? Maybe. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the big one for me is Gourlay going. I have not heard a single positive thing to come out about his time in charge. You know, I haven't seen a single player. I haven't heard anything on or off the record from anybody. And the only thing, you know, the big thing to judge on is where the club have went. And the club have gone from third place in the Championship to, you know, surviving on the last day and still being in a relegation battle with seven games to go. Not to mention that eye-wateringly painful set of financials. So look, the guy wasn't doing a good job. I'm sure he would sit there and tell you, I had a plan, it was going to turn around. Would it have turned around in time to, you know, save us from either relegation or financial catastrophe? Who knows? Key thing is he's gone now. Hopefully he'll never be back. And the current regime can at least stabilise it. I don't know what the long-term ambition of Nigel Howe is. I mean, he left once before. Is this a kind of situation where he's come in just to stabilise it for 6 to 18 months and we'll be looking for someone else? Or is he back for good? I don't know. And let's not pretend that Nigel Howe's reign has been, you know, completely flawless either. He's been at the helm and overseen a lot of, you know, bad buys. And, you know, you think back to the Steve Clarke mass loany era and things like that. So this isn't exactly, we're not getting back a chief executive who's had a perfect record either. So look, we'll see how it goes for both manager and chief executive. But to answer Tommy's question, I think we're in a better place now than we would have been.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that we're in a better place. Looking back at sort of Clement's final run of results, there's just so many late goals, some occasionally for us and missed opportunities going against us and whatnot. But I think, yeah, I think the Clement thing is kind of secondary for me, because I think he still had occasionally good ideas and he still occasionally did pull out some good results. And I don't think we'd not be like 10 points adrift if Clement was in charge, not by a million years. No. So
it sounds like, from the interviews that have come out and the snippets, that Clement again was a very good coach and the players liked his methods and they liked his ideas, but when it came to game management and motivation, that's where it seems to be lacking. And that's an accusation that's been levelled at him from, I think, what, Darren Bent and Craig Bellamy, I think, have also come out with the same sort of thing. So it does seem to be a common thing. But
and
you can also see
when Jan Kerman spoke to Tarleton, he wasn't a fan of Paul Clement.
And that's what triggered it in my mind. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, do again, would we be 10 points adrift? I agree with you, no. But would we be just inside the relegation? Who knows? We might well have beaten teams like Rotherham and Bolton under Clement. We just don't know. But as I said, the big one is Gourlay going. It sounds like it's been fantastic for the football club all around. And Nigel Howe seems like he is doing a really good job so far in sort of righting the ship. So credit to both him and Jose.
Yeah, definitely. I fully agree on the Gourlay thing. And yeah, just I think as a club, the work that Gomez has done in terms of speaking, the way he's spoken in the media, not just who he's spoken to and everything, has been very important. And, you know, hopefully that will lead us into good things on the pitch as well as off it. Jack Killick, a bit of a small mailbag, but two good questions this week, so not too much to bother in terms of stuff to talk about. Jack Killick saying that, I think the first half on Saturday was the best half of football I've watched from Reading this season. All game we limited Preston to very little, and I think every player was outstanding, bar Paul McShane. I want to give special mention to Lewis Baker. He has really improved in that defensive midfield role, and I think the midfield three we had on Saturday is what we should stick with for the rest of the season. I could really feel a connection between the players and fans on Saturday, and it's so refreshing to every player playing for the badge. I think next week we could get a result against Hull, especially if Oliveira is back. In Gomez we trust. And you picked up on Lewis Baker earlier, and that midfield three, so it was Ejaria, Swift and Baker, and I suppose you got Ejaria more on the flank and Rinomoto in there, and you know, players, as I said earlier, could kind of move around a little bit. But with Ejaria, Baker, Swift, you would think that there's not much steel in that, but Baker, for me, his ability to actually perform the defensive roles, I think, is a little bit underrated, and he sort of marshalled the back line in Rinomoto's absence. And now Rinomoto's come back in, you do actually have two players there that are very strong in terms of their reading of the game, which I think is so important. And, you know, it lets Swift and Ejaria and Barak, etc., go and, you know, do what they can do up further up the pitch. But Baker's role, you know, as you said earlier, I think it's developed quite nicely.
Yeah, just butt in to say, I think Bayern are 2-0 up now. So that pretty much ends the under-23s. But over 2,000 people turned up to the game.
Yeah,
so
2,157 was the attendance.
Fantastic,
which is,
turnout.
And about, quick sideways, about 40 of them were Bayern fans. And the Bayern fans had a little display. First one was, I think it's Ready for the Cup or something like that. And it was Reading, but they crossed out the ing and put a Y. So that was a bit of plain words. And then they also had a bowling ball, like cardboard bowling ball, with a Bayern badge on it and a bunch of pins of all the teams they've played so far in the competition. They rolled it along and knocked over these pins. So perhaps Club 1871 are taking some notes, because I'd certainly be up for getting those sort of displays in there. But we digress. The current midfield three is looking stronger.
Yeah, and as I said in the recap, that Rinomoto's return made such a difference, and it brought out the better side of John Swift, and you know, Baker as well has settled in. And again, it's important to remember with Baker that he isn't that experienced either. You know, he is what, 21 again as well, so he's going to be learning, getting to know it, and the ability to actually have a regular settled pairing can make such a big difference as well. You go back in Reading history, you know, your Sidwell and Harper, your Leisurewood and Karachan, they need time to bed in and get that understanding. And hopefully he goes from strength to strength. And we're seeing now the Baker that was so highly hyped up by Chelsea and on England duty. And, you know, fingers crossed that continues to develop. But again, I suppose you go back to the conversation we had about Miazga. Hopefully not too much, because we do want a chance of picking him up next season. So again, easy to see why, you know, Leeds wanted him at the start of the season, and why he's been so highly thought of. And it's great that he's actually realising that in a Reading shirt.
Well, it's also with Baker. He spent 2 years at Vitesse Arnhem in the hot Dutch league, and that's where he's made pretty much, if you look at his overall career appearances, that's where he's made most of them. So yeah, in terms of learning the championship and everything, that's still something that you've got to consider with a player of that age. And I think in that central midfield role, we've seen Rinomoto do it so well, but he had a very difficult start to the season. I couldn't really see what his use was, you know, when he was playing under Clement. So, you know, these things take time, and central midfield is arguably one of the toughest roles to learn as a player. So,
massively.
So Baker doing well is decent, and we certainly expect those three to be the ones starting at Hull on the weekend. And that is where we'll go to now in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, up to the KC Stadium. I think it's called the KC Stadium these days. It's one of those that continually changes its name, I'm sure, just like the team itself is constantly changing its name and not really what I think it is anymore. Or the K-Con.
Google, yeah, K-Con, which it is now.
Definitely is what KC stood for anyway, so I'm sure that I'm right. And it's the KC Stadium. Hull are the team that play there. Nigel Atkins, a former friend of Reading FC, and let's face it, still a friend of Reading FC, because he was never
good old
bad
Nige
guy, was he? So he's the man in charge, and he's done a pretty cracking job, I must say, because we spoke earlier about Hull being, and I agree, certainly when they came to us early in the season, looks like as a club they were going absolutely nowhere but down, and he has completely turned them around, and he's actually out of contract at the end of the season. And there's a great deal of uncertainty, I think, unless anything's changed in the last, you know, hour or so, that he might well just say, you know what, I've done my job, I'm going to move on. And with players like Jared Bowen, who's got 21 in 38 this season, there's actually like a relatively decent team there. But at this stage of the season, you know, they're 5 points off the playoffs. I haven't asked any Hull fans, but if I was a Hull fan, I wouldn't seriously believe they were going to make a push into them. This sort of mid-table inconsistency has been the name of the game for them so far. 3 wins, 2 losses, and a pretty average draw against QPR in their last 6. So, for me, this is a really decent opportunity to go and play a team that perhaps has its eye on next season, perhaps doesn't know, you know, a bit of financial uncertainty, a bit of managerial uncertainty. We can go there and get a win.
Yeah, if you look at our remaining away fixtures, I think this would be the one where you would say this is our best chance of getting a win, given that what our other games are away at Middlesbrough, Norwich, and I think there's one more. I can't think who it is off the top of my head. But yeah, why not? Why can't we go there? They have been distinctly average for a lot of the season. They have got threats, but so have we. You know, Nigel, we know the type of football that Nigel Atkins is going to play. It's a not too dissimilar style to what we play. So, yeah, it's not been a venue that we've had tremendous amount of luck at in recent years, but that anything can happen. And I think Reading will be going full throttle into this, you know, sort of looking, thinking, well, this will be the one, as I said, that we can get those away points off. So, always good. Nice if we get one over old Nige. But yeah, the other away game, yeah, Bristol City, Middlesbrough and Norwich. So out of those three, yeah, you would definitely say that this one is the one to go and target to get all 3 points. And then you've got the Norwich away game, which is, you know, what a free hit really, isn't it? If you get anything out of that, it's an absolute miracle. So yeah, let's go give it our all. My question to you though, Mark, would you risk Nelson Oliveira given his miraculous recovery?
I don't think you need to. I think that the game, the win that we've had on the weekend takes a lot of pressure off pretty much all the away games we have now. And as you know, to turn the, you're looking at the away game sort of thing on its head, the home games we've got are Brentford and Birmingham either side of West Brom. And you know, you look at 6, maybe 7 points or 5 points out of that, and that will take us to safety, I believe. So I don't think you need to target this game as a must win. And an Oliveira off the bench is a really nice sort of, you know, tactical trick that you can throw in there. If we're one goal down with 15 minutes to go, he is the ideal man to have there. And if you're 1-0 up, you don't need to play him. So I think he's one that I'd probably keep on the bench for the moment. The quick word on Jose Gomez's away form, because as you say, those other 3 games are going to be really difficult. At the moment, he's on a 1-1, drawn 4 and lost 4. Do you think that's just about good enough? Is it just about a fair reflection of him and his team, or is that actually a record that needs a little bit of tweaking?
Well, for a team he inherited, you know, in deep in relegation trouble, I think that's about what you can expect. I mean, getting a clean sheet at Stoke, clean sheet at Sheffield Wednesday, you know, getting the win, albeit in the slightly fortuitous circumstance at Ipswich, good results. They should have got something at Millwall were it not for Tyler Blackett. Sort of losing his head early doors. They played QPR relatively off the park in a 0-0 draw as well, so another clean sheet. So they're building a foundation to get those away results. They should have won at Bolton as well. Again, not for a very late goal. So it's only really the trips to Derby and Sheffield United where they've been properly blown away. So I'm relatively happy so far. Unfortunately, with those final 3 away games, you think this will probably be our last chance to get any sort of a positive result. Unless Middlesbrough are out of the reckoning on the last away game. So, yeah, it's solid. And keeping clean sheets away from home is your first real step to bigger and better things. So the fact he's kept 3 of those, and it should have been 4, if not 5, I think speaks really well.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think the whole game should be a decent one because it's 2 teams with, hopefully at this stage, relatively little to lose. So let's discuss predictions then, and the Reading under-23 Bayern under-23 game finished 3-1 to Bayern, by the way, 2 goals in stoppage time, 1 for us, 1 for Bayern. So that's that cup run, as it were, dealt with in the semi-final stage, which as a club we're certainly used to. But predictions for Hull then, quick recap of the state of play. Tom and Sim both picked up 1 point for predicting wins against Preston. Handbags, however, has jumped into the lead. He's now on 31 points after predicting 2-1 for the Preston game. And he's jumped ahead of Ollie, who's on 30 points, then Johnny Williams and yourself, Wim, on 28. You were the long-term leader for the start of the season.
Yeah, that
Gomez upturn hasn't... you perhaps didn't see it coming based on these predictions. So I'll give you first shot of the whole result to see out the show.
Oh, hell of a task for me to predict this one. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for a 1-0 win because I think this is a... I can really see us picking up a couple wins against, you know, maybe Hull and Brentford and then just completely tailing off in a quite ironic sort of sod to law kind of way. As soon as relegation is sort of done and dusted, the teams will just be mentally on the beach and maybe those last four games will just pick up four straight defeats or something and that'll be the way the cookie crumbles on it. On this season, but it's certainly, you know, if you'd have offered me that 10 weeks ago, I certainly would have taken it. So a win, I think, that we'll get against Hull on the weekend. This show will be back after that, hopefully reviewing a decent win before we go to Norwich in midweek and then Brentford the weekend after that. So all that is left for me to do on this podcast is thank you, Wim, for popping on this evening.
That's all right. And just before I go as well, Mark, I'd like to, again, really tip my cap to the chaps organising Club 1871. And a few weeks ago, they were getting some real flack, and lots of people saying, oh, you know, they're taking up valuable money and, you know, yeah, it's a failure, move them here, move them there. And, you know, they stuck with it, and credit to them because they've, you know, really helped build the atmosphere at the Badeski. They're making it a place where people actually enjoy coming again. It's not obviously the team performing on the pitch is a big part of that as well, but I did want to, you know, give a lot of credit to those guys for sticking with it and really, you know, creating a fun part of the matchday experience. So well done, chaps, and ladies involved as well.
Yeah, and it's been a big part of what has been, you know, the last five games we've had three big sort of finishes, as it were, three big wins out of that and a draw and a difficult defeat in amongst it. But that sort of ratio of winning 3 and 5 and getting a point of it is exactly the sort of form that is going to take us out of this relegation difficulty win at the moment. We go to Hull on the weekend and then Norwich, and those are two relatively pressure-free games, two teams doing relatively well, two teams that are going to play football. We can play football against them, put ourselves up against some of the better players in the league, see what happens at the end of it, and hopefully, no matter what, we'll still be outside the relegation zone in a few weeks' time and, of course, at the end of the season. That's all that matters for Reading Football Club at the moment, being out of that relegation zone at the end of the season. And that is exactly what Jose Gomez has done to aplomb in his last few weeks. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always